that's pretty good talent, man. This dude actually animates his stuff. I don't have that kind of talent. I've got, here. Does this put us on an even playing field? I have Castlevania on the Nintendo. No? How about Exorcist on DVD? No? Kathy Lee Gifford's Sentimental on audio cassette. Admit your envy.
Hey guys, Josh from the Ancient History Guy here. Hello and welcome to all. I hope you're all having a fantastic day. Today we are going to once again be diving into one of Graham Hancock's theories because A, it's fun, and B, I just want to. Today we are going to be looking at the famous Vulture Stone located within the complex of Göbekli Tepe.
Your name's Josh? I thought it was Cody. I never was good at the names of those different Fisher-Price little people. I could barely keep up with my G.I. Joes and Transformers as a kid, and then now, 50 gajillion years later, I could barely remember this shit. But anyway, it's pretty refreshing, actually, to hear that you say that you want to review Hancock stuff and instead of, like, you're begrudgingly do it because you think that it needs to be debunked. It's something that you think is fun and enjoy, and that's pretty cool because I like Hancock stuff, too, and a lot of it I don't agree with as well. However, I think we're going to take quite a different approach here as we go into the Göbekli Tepe thing.
What is the Vulture Stone? Well, simply put, it's a giant slab of standing limestone with vultures and scorpions carved into it, within the ancient site of Göbekli Tepe. Now, the Vulture Stone is actually one of the many standing stones around the temple. It just so happens to be the most highly decorated. And so, it draws the most attention as a result.
The Vulture Stone, aka Pillar 43, aka that really cool rock right there, has a lot more going on to it than just some scorpions and some vultures. For one, there's only one of each of those on there. But more than that, there's a lot of other stuff on there, not just animals, but some symbolism too. So I kind of feel like you're oversimplifying this here right out the gate.
Graham Hancock claims that these symbols, these shapes, and these essentially halos of animals are actually constellations, because obviously the scorpion shape is a reference to our own very modern constellation, Scorpio.
Graham Hancock didn't mention it in the episode of Ancient Apocalypse, so I'm not surprised that Josh missed it here, but Dr. Martin Sweatman actually published and had a paper peer-reviewed on this. This isn't just like some idea. This is archaeoastronomy. This has been peer-reviewed. Now, it's contested, obviously, but to just be like, well, you know, they look at this and they think, whatever, that's not accurate. This is archaeoastronomy that has been, this is peer-reviewed science, all right? It's maybe science you disagree with, and that's fine. It is contested science. I won't argue with that, but it is peer-reviewed science, and I think that is important to note, and it is almost always missed in these things. And again, it's probably because Hancock missed it in the episode. It's, you know, and it's the kind of thing that a lot of people just think is bullshit, so they don't bother looking up. But in addition to that, Scorpio is one of the oldest constellations that we know of. It's so old that the oldest star catalogs that we have from Babylon reference getting it from the Akkadians, and then we don't know where they got it from, but and that's like 4500 BC. We're talking like a long, long, long time ago. So calling this a modern constellation, that's not accurate at all.
He then goes on to claim that these depictions are a warning to us about a comet that struck the Earth and caused mass devastation, and the constellations being portrayed are a sort of mark in the calendar, so as to A, tell the visitor that this event happened on such and such date, and B, tell future humans that this could happen again. Sufficient to say there are multiple problems with this theory.
Well, I will agree with you out the gate that this is not something probably made to warn future generations about. It does make a lot of sense that this would be a place that was used to view comets and to watch meteor streams and stuff. I mean, you would know the time of year that kind of stuff happens, so it would kind of make sense that recording dates and things into the stone would be a big deal, especially if a big rock did smack the Earth at a certain point. That date would be worth remembering. And there's a lot of serpent symbolism at the site, and no archaeologist or anthropologist really would debate that that's frequently equated with comets. Serpents, really anywhere in the world you can find that symbolism. You actually provide a link to a lot of that stuff, Josh, and I'm not really sure why, because it doesn't support any of the points that you make throughout this. But if you look through this link here, there's a lot of pictures of snakes at the site. So it does track that it was a place that potentially was used to watch meteor streams or comets. This isn't a stretch. I would completely agree, though, that the idea of them warning future generation 10,000 years from now that the rock was coming again, That's a bit of a stretch.
It is very much leaning on our Western version of constellations. The Western constellations are, after all, directly adapted from Greek myths and constellations, which they themselves are a corruption of ancient Sumerian Babylonian myths. However, all around the world, people drew different shapes in the sky. I mean, I as a kid thought the belt of Orion was the head of a horse.
Now, this is the kind of take that's very modern, and in my opinion, it relies on not getting archaeology and or astronomy. And it's not surprising that Josh has this take. A lot of people do. But it's because he doesn't use Orion. The ancients used Orion to hunt and to plant crops and to tell time with, and he doesn't. So to him, he can just interpret Orion as any old thing because nobody sat him down and was like, that's the hunter in the sky. But when that was the clock, he would have learned it like he learned his numbers. It would have been early, early, early stuff, and there would have been no room for these alternate interpretations because you need to know where that hunter in the sky is to find your way home on a boat or to know where the buffalo are going to be or when to plant the corn. All right, this is like basic stuff, really, in my opinion, for archaeoastronomy. So from that perspective, yes, a constellation like Scorpio that we know goes back at least 6,000 years, like it's recorded back at 6,000 plus years. So we know it's halfway back as far as Göbekli Tepe to begin with. It's not really a stretch for it to make it the rest of the way back with much of the rest of the zodiac being changed along the way. Because yes, pieces are going to fall off, societies are going to change, but they're also going to maintain certain core key principles, right? Like religion, like we'll talk about in a little bit. There will be certain core key principles that are maintained even when all kinds of other pieces are peripherally fall off. The basics will be maintained. And in this case, the constellation Scorpio is on the ecliptic. It's one of the constellations that makes up the zodiac, and it's in the path of the sun. It's used to tell time with. It's part of a 12-constellation timepiece that our clocks are actually based on. And side note really quick, the constellation Scorpio was one of the cardinal points, one of the four main constellations where the equinoxes or solstices fell on 12,000 years ago when Göbekli Tepe was made. So it does make sense that it would be one of the named ones back in those days. But when we already know that this constellation has made it over 6,000 years and we know that it was got from another people before that, it's not really a stretch to think that this one made it back that far. As a matter of fact, if you were to find that exact scorpion symbol on a Babylonian border stone, there would be no debate. Astronomers would say, yes, that is almost certainly Scorpio's.
In China, Scorpio, the very constellation that is quote-unquote obviously portrayed at Göbekli Tepe, is completely different and actually makes up part of a larger constellation, or more room thing. Truth be told, Chinese constellations are weird.
Yeah, Chinese constellations are a little weird, but what's not weird is the way that they've done the same thing that we have here in the West, and they've cut the sky into a number of pieces, 28 in the Chinese room system, but what it is, it's a way for them to track the path of the sun. That's why Scorpio is included there, because like I mentioned earlier, it's right in the ecliptic, it's right in the path of the sun. So, of course it's going to be incorporated in that, because they have a timepiece too. Their timepiece was inherited from the Hindus, and it's a little bit different, but it effectively does the same thing. So these asterisms are going to be incorporated. Now, again, the Chinese one's weird, but it's doing the same thing, and I think that's very important to note.
Evidence for this can be found in Indonesia. The constellation there is known as, and I'm saying the translated version here, because Lord Almighty, that is a very long name, the Booted Swan or Leaning Coconut Tree.
I was excited to research this part because I don't know much about Indonesian constellations from the old days. And one of the things I found was that they call their system the Pranada Mansga. And I can't find anything in English, so I was just dumping articles into Google Translate, which gets tiring and very hard to discern what's going on, especially when some of the words don't translate. But what I was able to discern is that they do have a number of the same constellations we do, mostly the obvious ones, but Scorpio is among these ones. And yes, it's not considered a scorpion over there. But their system, again, is derived to tell time and seems to mark the ecliptic of the sun as best I can tell, and seems to be derived from the Hindu system, the same as the Chinese system was, the way it's intertwined with more things than just farming. It's got all the fortune-telling intertwined woo, like I've talked about before with the Chinese system. But anyway, it is an interesting system, but the bottom line is it's still doing the same thing, is it's telling time, and that's why that Scorpio shows up. So yeah, it doesn't have to be Scorpio in every case, but in many cases it will be. That's why we see it from Mesopotamia to Greece and now all the way to America, right? This shit spreads because it works. And in the old days, it was important. It was like teaching your kids the numbers on a clock.
If we consider the vast distance of time between then and now, I think it's almost impossible not to come to the conclusion that they are not drawing our recognized constellations. In fact, it seems almost a bit ignorant to assume such. Carrying on from my statement of a vast amount of time, as Hancock rightfully points out, the sky would have been different than it is today. A, because light pollution, but also because of the way the Earth orbits and the Sun itself orbits around the Milky Way.
No, we have one recognized constellations and others that are resembling other asterisms, and this is, I've covered before, but this is a very standard methodology, and I'll post a link in the description and a picture right here of the name of the article, but it goes over how this is what they do in archaeoastronomy, and it's frequently what they do in archaeology as well. They find a touchstone. Well, they don't have any cultural reference, like here. They don't have anybody to talk to. They don't have any writing. They find a cultural reference that they can superimpose from another culture and then try to extrapolate. And that's exactly what they've done here. They have the scorpion. They superimpose the Greek asterisms over that and see what they can find. Is it perfect? Absolutely not. But it does offer a window into a culture that we would otherwise not be able to get. So it is kind of a big deal. It's where archaeoastronomy offers, let's just be blunt about it. We have two hypotheses here that are both competing, that are both somewhat supported by evidence, but also both somewhat not supported by evidence. One is that this was a place of a skull cult, and the other one is that this was a place for meteor watching. So archaeoastronomy is offering a whole entire second avenue of possibility here. But you're dismissing it out of hand because you don't really understand it. And your second statement here absolutely drives that point home. Yeah, the sky would look different than it does now. That's why this whole celestial clock thing works. That's why we did the same thing at Hoover Dam a long time ago, as I mentioned frequently, because it's something that people do. We want others to know when we did our stuff, and we know that the stars are a way that people consistently use to tell time over millennia. So it doesn't matter what language they speak, what anything, we can tell them an approximate date using stars.
So in case you haven't noticed, I am leaning heavily towards these depictions not being constellations. This is backed up by the actual archaeologists on the ground digging at Göbekli Tepe, who say this about the theory, quote, "The assumption that asterisms, familiar star patterns, are stable across time and cultures is not convincing. It is highly unlikely that early Neolithic hunters in the Upper Mesopotamia recognized the exact same celestial constellations as described by ancient Egyptians, Arabians, and Greek scholars, which still populate our imagined today. So, not even the people that are uncovering these ancient pieces of art think that they are constellations for the exact reasons I have just listed."
Well, first of all, I'd point out that it doesn't matter how good they are at archaeology alone if they don't understand astronomy and they have a modern take on it like you seem to have. No offense again, Josh, but they're not going to get it. They're not going to put the pieces together because they're not going to see the pieces. It's like a math equation being handed to somebody who doesn't get math. It doesn't do them any good. Well, I'll point out why I myself personally, a lot of people that are into this stuff think that this actually makes a lot of sense. Because with Scorpius occupying a piece of the sky that the sun passes through, it's going to be used across cultures like China and everywhere. It's going to be used everywhere. And if it is depicted as a scorpion and passed around, Turkey's not very far from Greece, from Egypt, from all this Mesopotamia, from all this area where this stuff shows up as scorpion. So it's not a stretch to assume that, especially when we already know for a fact it goes back over halfway that far. So it's not really a stretch to assume that at all. We've been using that constellation for over 6,000 years that we know of. I mean, and then we know that it goes back further than that because the written records tell us so. So to say that we couldn't be using it another 6,000 years, in my opinion, is kind of crazy because, again, these guys were following herds with those stars. They were going to, this was supposedly a ceremonial place, right? So they were going there a certain time of year. How did they know to go where, what time of year? By looking at the dang stars, man. So, yeah. And when you talked to another community that traveled in a different, whole different traveling circle, you would still tell them to come when the scorpion or the lion or the twins or whatever, right?
This actually isn't too dissimilar to the oldest religion in the world, Zoroastrianism, which has the body of the deceased placed on a tall tower to be naturally decomposed by the earth and scavengers. This probably explains why vultures and scorpions are so prominent. Vultures are, well, scavengers. They find corpses, they descend on them, and then they peck at it until there is nothing left but bone. The theory goes that this carving is simply portraying what happens when you perform the rites at the temple, which was clearly an important aspect of the culture that built Göbekli Tepe.
Well, that doesn't really make much sense, though, does it? There's two animals depicted on that thing that might chew on a corpse, a vulture and a fox or a wolf or a dog or whatever. Everything else on there ain't scavengers. It ain't going to eat a corpse. So why are they depicted there? You going to have flamingos running around hanging out over dead bodies? It doesn't even make sense, man. And there's a bunch of that stuff on that pillar. The scorpion and the vulture being the prominent things, and the vulture being the only one that would eat a human. I don't think this tracks very good, personally. But again, I wouldn't discard this hypothesis outright, but I would say that I think there's a lot of glaring holes here that you're looking over. But in addition to that, you bring up Zoroastrianism, which the oldest records we have are like, you know, 600 BC, something like that. And then they figure it goes back to like a couple thousand years before that. So you might say like 4500 BC. And again, Scorpio goes back to 6500 BC. So you have no problem with age separating Zoroastrianism from this place. You're like, oh, yeah, it's just like the oldest world's oldest religion. Maybe they were doing the same thing. But you have a problem with one constellation of the five or so depicted there, supposedly depicted, the eight or something depicted there, being an exact match for the one that we have now? That doesn't make any sense to me. It's closer in time, and again, he superimposed one constellation onto that and worked out from there. And some of them are very compelling matches, like his match for Pisces is pretty damn good, right? So I don't know. To me, it seems like you're exercising a bit of a double standard here. You're very, very skeptical of the age separation when it's 6,000 years. But when it's 8,000 years, the age separation all of a sudden doesn't matter because that idea just makes more sense to you.
So what about the comic theory? Well, I'll leave this to Andrew Collins to explain as to why this theory is so widely accepted without any evidence that the Vulture Stone is portraying a comet. Quote, "It is infinitely more tempting to conclude that the Vulture Stone really is a warning of impending doom from future comet impacts conveyed across time by the Göbekli builders. This is unfortunate, as despite all evidence to the contrary, such sensationalist views will continue to influence the opinions of researchers well into the future."
Personally, I think focusing on the whole comet impact warning part of this is like missing the boat, because looking at it as potentially a astronomical timepiece, that is something that, like, as a core of it, could potentially pan out. Then the interpretation as to why it was picked is a different thing altogether. But in my opinion, the way that it's being just discarded by academics that don't really know a whole lot about this topic is pretty telling as to how gatekeepy this aspect of academia is. This is a place that's completely unfounded. Again, you know, you found a few bodies there. They found some skulls that have been decorated and shit. There's really not a lot for them to hang their hat on any direction. And always they're required to superimpose ideas from other cultures that we know of much later in history to even come up with anything. Zoroastrianism, for example, you have to superimpose the ideas from a different set of ideas to look at it from a perspective that even makes sense. And that's exactly what Dr. Sweatman, or Hancock, as you keep saying, has done here in this situation. He's looked at Scorpio, superimposed from that, and built from there, looking out. It's the same as you're looking at it with the whole death cult thing. So to me, this is where the butthurt lies, is that we have two competing schools of thought here, and they both come up with different hypotheses, and one school of thought is offended by the other coming into their turf, telling them what's going on. Now, I could entirely be wrong in misinterpreting that, but from what I've seen, that seems very much the case. It seems over and over again, the people that attack these things really don't understand the basics of it. And again, it's really not, it's completely misunderstandable. You know, again, we don't use the constellations like the ancients did. So if you don't even like start from that perspective, that like basic archaeoastronomy idea of the constellations were goddamn important to these people, you're not going to get it. You're just not. There's no way you're going to be able to put it together. You're not giving these things the gravity that they deserve. I would dare say that less than 2% of all of the people that have ever lived throughout human history have not had the night sky be a huge part of their life. I mean, it's even to you now, you see the night sky a lot. It's a huge part of your life. Whether or not it's something that you recognize as a huge part of your life may or may not be, but it's a shared experience that we have that goes all the way back. And it's a shared experience that, again, yes, things change a little bit, but I'm seeing almost the exact same sky that they saw at Göbekli Tepe. By comparison to anything else, by comparison to language or gods or food or ideas, any of it, those stars are fucking close. So in my opinion, it really is a lens that should be held in high regard, but it's not. It's kind of pissed on.
So from all over the academic and actual real-world evidence of constellations in the real world, we can come to the conclusion that Hancock's idea that the halos of animals carved into the vulture stone, specifically the over-reliance of the scorpion to represent Scorpio, is a load of utter rubbish. They are definitely not constellations, and if they were, the chances of the scorpion being our fairly recent depiction of Scorpio is just so far-fetched that it's almost laughable. Anyways, those are just my thoughts. What do you think? Let me know down in the comments below.
No, since your Twitter looks like you pretty much never use it, I'll let you know in the comments that I made a response video to you, but I think I left all of my thoughts here, so I don't really need to like explain them all a second time. You're not going to be like Pothole, are you? Anyway, I don't think that Josh is a bad guy. I think that he's missing the boat here in a way that a lot of people are. And in all honesty, you can pin some of that blame on Hancock for not highlighting that Dr. Swetman's paper was peer-reviewed, published archaeoastronomy work. So by not acknowledging that in the episode of Ancient Apocalypse where it came up, you can't really blame people responding to it for not thinking that it is a peer-reviewed published piece of work, because so many of the things that Hancock parades out aren't. However, in this case, this is peer-reviewed published archaeoastronomy. This is not just BS. This has some merit. Now, there are plenty of people that will attack it, and it does not mean that it's it's the be-all end-all of all the interpretations of Göbekli Tepe. Far from it. But it is one that should be considered far more validly, far more fairly than it is right now. In my opinion, it is just being completely disregarded by its association to Hancock and Ancient Apocalypse and people not looking into it. In my opinion, that Pillar 43 representing a star clock of some type is every bit as valid of an interpretation currently, given the evidence we have, as it being a place where they laid out multiple bodies to be stripped down to some ritualistic Zoroastrianism-esque thing, right? But at any rate, I've already laid out my arguments, so we don't need to regurgitate them a second time. Thank you very much for watching. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and share the video if you would, please. The algorithm's all goofy nowadays. I was a little freaking out about it there for a second because YouTube just quit sharing things, but it's doing it to everybody. So when I joke around about sharing it with your grandma, don't share it with her. She won't watch it. But if your pastor will watch it, or your grandma's pastor will watch it, or your grandma's boss's pastor's cousin will watch it, send it.